Turn with me, please, to the passage we read in Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. And reading again at verse 10. Luke 19 and verse 10. We read, "The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Well, we're focusing this morning on this very well-known story of a small man with a very big problem. The story of this notable cheat who experienced and displayed a notable conversion. And this story really contains a wonderful invitation to everyone and anyone who reads it to come to the same Jesus, the same Saviour that this man Zacchaeus came to. The first thing we see in this passage is the curiosity, verses 1 to 4. And we see in these verses that Zacchaeus is a man who's curious about Jesus. Verse 1 gives us the context where we're told Jesus is passing through Jericho. Now that's significant. Jesus has set his face like flint to go to Jerusalem and go to his death. And he has much in his mind, his arrest, his betrayal, his interrogation, his crucifixion, the most intense and difficult moments of his entire existence lie straight ahead of him. And in these last few pressured days of his life, we see that Jesus has such a great heart for people like Zacchaeus that he's willing to stop for Zacchaeus. You see, Jesus is never too busy. He's never too pressured. He's never too preoccupied to deal with you, to deal with me at our point of need. Never too busy, never too pressured, never too preoccupied. And in verses 2 and 3, we're introduced to this man, Zacchaeus. And we're told his parents have given him the name Zacchaeus. It means the righteous one. They'd hoped that their son would grow up to be a man of God. They'd hoped that their son would grow up to be a beacon for the glory of God. But Zacchaeus hasn't lived up to his parents' hopes and dreams. We're told he's the chief tax collector. The Romans would employ Jews to gather taxes from their fellow countrymen and then give those taxes to the Roman Empire. Those tax collectors, like Zacchaeus, were regarded as filthy traitors and turncoats. And Zacchaeus, we're told, is the chief tax collector. He's Rome's main man for their tax policy in Jericho. And we're told that Zacchaeus is wealthy. He's lined his pockets. He's made a killing from taxing his own people. Zacchaeus is an unpopular man. He's abused his fellow Jews. He's an employee of Rome. He's a traitor to God. He's a social leper. But we're told he was seeking to see Jesus. He wanted to see Jesus. And I want to encourage you, you can be the most unpopular person ever. Everyone may know the very worst about you. Everyone may gossip about you. Everyone may want nothing to do with you. But if you want to see Jesus like Zacchaeus, you've got something going for you. And verse 4 highlights that Zacchaeus was determined to see Jesus. He's got this problem in his desire to see Jesus. We're told there's crowds of people coming to see the teacher and healer from Nazareth. It's a big social occasion. Everyone's come to see Jesus. Men are pushing past women. Women are putting their children on their shoulders. Children are scurrying underneath the legs of the adults. You might want to think of the Co-op or Tesco on a Saturday afternoon. It's chaos. It's carnage. And Zacchaeus, we're told, is a short man. And nobody's going to make room. Nobody's going to make way for this man, this person who is least deserving of seeing this Jesus. But he's determined to see Jesus. And so he runs. Now, no self-respecting Jew ran in Jesus' day. It was beneath them. It was shameful. The only time you might see Zacchaeus running would be to catch someone who wasn't paying their taxes. But Zacchaeus doesn't care now. He's got to see Jesus. And he climbs this tree. It's a ridiculous image. But it shows this dogged, desperate determination Zacchaeus had to see Jesus. Jesus is passing by. And it's almost as if, isn't it? that Zacchaeus knows this is the only opportunity he'll ever have of seeing Jesus. Time is limited. Time is passing. Time is short. Jesus is passing by. And Zacchaeus is a man who's curious to see him. Now maybe you're here today and you're like Zacchaeus. You're curious about Jesus. You've never really believed in him. You've never really experienced a change in your life. You've never really been able to call yourself a Christian. But you're curious. You're interested. There's something that you find compelling about this Jesus. Maybe you've seen the difference he's made in someone's life. How he turned their life around, and you want to find out more. Maybe your conscience is pricking you. There's something from the past that's weighing you down. And you've heard about this Savior who can save people from their past, their present, their future sins. Maybe you're dissatisfied with your lot in life. And you're sitting and you're thinking, there's got to be more to life than my work and the rut that I've got myself into. Maybe you're simply wanting some companionship. There's a gap in your soul that nothing and no one will fill. And you're hoping against hope that this man, Jesus, might possibly say to you, my friend. For whatever reason, you're here. And you're curious about Jesus. And if that's you, then listen on. Because this brings us second to the call in verses 5 and 6. We're told that Zacchaeus is a man who's called by Jesus. In verse 5, we read Jesus' words to Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus thought he was safe in his tree. He thought he could be left alone. He thought he could watch Jesus from afar. He thought he could keep Jesus at a safe distance. He thought he could meet Jesus on his own terms. He thought he could take or leave Jesus as he pleased. But Jesus doesn't work like that. You might want to slip in and out of church. You might want nobody to notice you or challenge you. You might want to dictate the terms on which you'll come to Jesus. You might want to keep your faith, if you've got a faith, of any private thing. But God doesn't work like that. Jesus won't leave Zacchaeus up in his tree, and he blasts him out into the public, blasts him out into the open. And Jesus says in verse 5, Zacchaeus, hurry down, for I must spend time at your house. Don't you love how he speaks to Zacchaeus? He addresses him by name. Now, they've never met, but Jesus knows Zacchaeus' name. And he doesn't say, Zacchaeus, would you please come down from that tree, because I'd really like to have dinner at your house, if that's okay, and it's not too much bother with you, and if you've got nothing better to do, then I'll spend a wee bit of time with you. Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus says, Zacchaeus, hurry down from that tree. I must spend time at your house. It's a sovereign command. And we're told Jesus must stay at Zacchaeus' house. This must is the must of God's sovereignty. It's God's plan, God's purpose, God's will that Jesus go to the house of Zacchaeus. It's God's plan, God's purpose, God's will that Jesus stop and spend time with the tax collector from Jericho, the all-knowing, all-powerful, all-present, eternal God has sovereignly decided Zacchaeus will come to Jesus. He will become a follower of Jesus. And so Jesus says to Zacchaeus, hurry down from that tree. I must spend time at your house. And look at Zacchaeus' response in verse 6. Zacchaeus responds immediately. There's none of this, wait Jesus until I'm older. None of this, can we hand fire Jesus until I put my children through uni, until I paid off the mortgage, until I've enjoyed a bit more of life. There's none of this, Jesus, I'd like to really enjoy what the world has to offer, and then I'll come to you. I'll come when I'm older, I'll come when I've experienced life, but not yet, don't intervene in my life just yet, not at all. We're told Zacchaeus slithers down that tree at once, immediately. And we're told he responds publicly. Everyone's with Jesus. And now everyone sees Jesus addressing this tax collector. And everyone sees Zacchaeus' response to Jesus as he slithers down that tree. But Zacchaeus doesn't care what his family think, what his friends think, what his colleagues think, what his neighbors think, what the town thinks, what his enemies think. He has eyes only for Jesus. As we respond to Jesus and comes down our feet in the public eye, he's making a public profession of faith. He knows he cannot keep his faith a private thing. And we're told also that he responds, did you see, gladly and joyfully. Now there's a degree of solemnity about the Christian faith. No one can ever read the gospel record of Jesus dying on the cross for them and have a laugh, have a chuckle. But there's also this gladness and this joy that Jesus would notice us and love us and save us. And that's how Zacchaeus feels. He responds to Jesus immediately, he responds to Jesus publicly, and he responds to Jesus joyfully, with a new song of praise on his lips, a song to the God of amazing grace. Zacchaeus is a man who's called by Jesus. And as we look at Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus, we're reminded we have a Jesus who knows us. He knows your name. He knows your address. Knows your email and phone details. Knows about every relationship you have, the good relationships and the rubbish relationships. He knows what you take pride in, and he knows what you wish nobody ever would ever find out. And he knows today what you think of him. And he knows how you're curious about him. But as we look at Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus, we're also reminded we have a Jesus who seeks us. He's like a woman who lost one silver coin and turns the whole house upside down looking for that one coin and rejoices when she finds it. He's like a shepherd who loses a sheep and he goes out looking for the sheep, and when he finds it, he puts it on his shoulders and says to his friends, says to his neighbours, says to the community, rejoice with me, I found my lost sheep. Jesus doesn't simply know you. He seeks you out. But as we look at Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus, we're furthermore reminded we have a Jesus who calls us. See, he doesn't simply know his people. He doesn't simply seek them out. He calls them. And he calls Zacchaeus with this powerful, effective, sovereign call. And what does Zacchaeus do? He responds. And Jesus is calling through his word today. And he's calling through his word this morning. And he's saying, come to me. Believe in me. Receive me. Love me. Listen to me. Follow me. Find rest in me. Do you see all these commands he gives in his word? These are commands he gives to every person who reads that word. And the question is, will you respond to his call? Will you respond to his gospel invitation? He knows his people. He seeks them out. And he calls them saying, come to me. This brings us third to the change, verses 7 and 8. And we're told that Zacchaeus is a man who's changed by Jesus. You know, there's a ripple of discontent in the crowd. Did you see it in verse 7? The Jericho crowd expected Jesus to give some teaching. They expected him to perform some miracle. They expected him to bless some children. They expected him to tell some good stories. And then they expected him to go to the house of someone special, someone deserving, someone who is worthy. But look at what they witness. Jesus sees a man everyone else ignored. Jesus speaks to a man everyone else hated. Jesus goes to the home of a man everyone else gossiped about. And Jesus eats with a man that nobody would ever invite to church, because tax collectors were forbidden from going to the synagogue. And listen to what the crowds say. Do they sing Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like Mr. Z? Do they? No, we read they murmur. They complain. They grumble. They have only criticism for Zacchaeus. They can't even address him by name. They say, Jesus is going to that house of a sinner. They're happy to allow this man, Zacchaeus, to wallow in the muck and the mud and the mire of his own making. But note also, they also have nothing but criticism for Jesus. They're angry with Jesus for daring to go to Zacchaeus' house. Jesus shouldn't be walking on the same street. Never mind being in the same house, the same room, the same couch as Zacchaeus. They're disappointed with Jesus, angry with Jesus. He's let them down. And there's a very practical lesson for us here. Are there people we may have written off as standing no chance of becoming Christians? Are there people that we might be upset if they came to church and sat next to us? Or even worse, sat on our seat? Are there people we may have who may have claimed to have become Christians, but we've said, well, let's see how long it lasts. We're just waiting for them to fail, falter, and fall. And then we'll say, I knew it. That wasn't a real conversion. But look at the response of Zacchaeus in verse 8. He addresses Jesus. He says, look, Lord. Behold, Lord. I love that. If the crowds were grumbling about me, I'd be grumbling about them. If the crowds were bringing up my past, I'd be bringing up their past. But Zacchaeus isn't interested in the crowds and what they think of him. Zacchaeus is interested in Jesus and what Jesus thinks of him. And friend, when your eyes are fixed on Jesus, that transforms your perspective. And you don't care what others think. You don't care what others feel. You don't care what others say. You care about Jesus. And we see that Zacchaeus desires to make this restitution. He says in verse 8, behold, Lord, if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will restore it fourfold. Zacchaeus wants to change his behaviour because his heart's changed. And he wants Jesus to know that he sees Jesus as supreme, as valuable, as first and foremost in his life. Do you remember in John's Gospel, Peter said, Lord, you know that I love you. And now Zacchaeus says, Lord, you know I love you. But please let me show my love for you. He said, I don't want to be called Mr. Righteous. I want to show that righteousness. Zacchaeus is a man who's changed by Jesus. Now how do you know someone's a true believer? That their conversion isn't phony or fake? How do you know that someone's a Christian? Well, look at Zacchaeus. His life was changed. He turned from his sin. He turned to Jesus. He repented. There was fruit because there was a root. A root of faith. And friends, if there is no fruit of faith, it's because there is no root of faith. There's a story told about a shipyard in Belfast in 1922, and the minister was preaching and there was a great revival, and the men were changed in such a way that they started giving back all the instruments and all the implements that they'd stolen from the workplace, and a room had to be built to house all these instruments and implements, and eventually a sign was put up asking to stop returning all the instruments and implements and tools because there wasn't any room. It was a transformation. There was a change among these men. How do you know you're a Christian? There's a change. You want to live for Jesus because you know his love for you. And how do you know someone else is a Christian? There's a change. They want to live for Jesus because they know his love for them. There's a root of faith. And there's the fruit of faith. And when we see someone claiming to be a Christian, claiming to be born again, and we see the transformation in their lives, let's simply rejoice in God's work and encourage them to keep on keeping on. We've seen people profess faith this weekend, but they're not statistics. They're not going down in the church register as so-and-so and so-and-so became members at the communion in November 2016. No. They are people, and they should be encouraged in their walk with God. We should be encouraging them as a congregation. And it's a community project. Whether someone professed faith 50 years ago or 5 days ago, we should be encouraging them, shouldn't we, to keep on keeping on, because Christianity is a community project. This brings us fourth and finally to the comfort, verses 9 and 10. And we see this is the case of the man who receives comfort from Jesus. It's a case of the man who receives comfort from Jesus. In verse 9, Jesus gives a word of comfort concerning the change in Zacchaeus' life. Jesus speaks about salvation coming to the house of Zacchaeus. And in case we aren't sure what that salvation is, Jesus explains and he says, Zacchaeus is a son of Abraham. Zacchaeus is one of God's people. He's in God's family. Abram is his spiritual father. He's placed his faith in the same Messiah, the same deliverer, the same Jesus that Abram placed his faith in, and now he, like Abraham, has become an heir, a recipient of God's promises of blessing and grace, like we've been looking at in Galatians these last few Sunday evenings. Jesus is saying to Zacchaeus, welcome home. Welcome into my fellowship. Welcome into my family. Welcome into union and communion with me, Zacchaeus. And then in verse 10, Jesus gives a word of comfort concerning his mission. Jesus claims in verse 10, he's come to seek and to save the lost. Those are very similar words to what we find in Mark chapter 2. Do you remember Jesus calls this tax collector Levi or Matthew to follow him and be a disciple? And the crowds murmur and grumble and complain. He's eating with tax collectors and sinners. And what does Jesus say? It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've come not to call the righteous, but sinners. And here again, Jesus says, I've not come for the good people. I've not come for the people whose lives are all together. I've come for the messy, I've come for the broken, I've come for the guilty, I've come for those wallowing in shame. This is significant. Because when Jesus goes to Zacchaeus' house, he's not going for a free meal. When he goes to this house, he's going to display and declare God's grace to Zacchaeus. When he goes to this house, he's going to break down the barriers, the divisions between God, between him and Zacchaeus. When he goes to this house, he's going to welcome Zacchaeus into his family, into his fellowship, into his home. Isn't that amazing? Zacchaeus thinks he's bringing Jesus into his home. Jesus says, you're coming into my home. Zacchaeus is a man who receives comfort from Jesus. And as we listen to Jesus' words of comfort, I want to ask, do you know him today? Are you a companion of Jesus today? Jesus can deal with your dark stuff, your murky stuff, the stuff you hope would never see the light of day. And only Jesus can deal with that stuff because he's taken it with him to the cross at Calvary and paid the penalty for that sin. Because he's come and dealt with that record of death, he can take anyone from the pigsty of sin and say to them, come home, come into fellowship with me. That's the Jesus the gospel offers. A Jesus who invites us into his kingdom free of charge. Now you may be wrestling with that today. You may be saying, well, that's all very well and good, but I'm really messed up. I'm really broken. I'm really backslidden. And Jesus might be there for those who have a sneaky watch of the soaps on a Sunday. Jesus might be there for those who have a laugh at a crude joke. Jesus might even be there for those who have one tipple too many at the New Year. But he doesn't know what I've really gotten into. He doesn't know the dark, the murky stuff that I'm dealing with. And if he knew, he'd want nothing to do with me. Well, Jesus knows the very best about us. But he also knows the very worst, and he says, I have come to seek and to save the lost. That's the Saviour we need. That's the Jesus we have. The one who came to seek and to save the lost. There's a story told about a young boy who got himself into a lot of trouble. In fact, got himself into so much trouble, his parents eventually said, you can't be in the home anymore. And he went off to a city and he got himself into a terrible mess there. And then he came to Wits End Corner. And he wrote to his parents and he said, I'd like to come home. And I'll be on the train next Friday. And he said in his letter, I'll only come if I see a white handkerchief tied to a branch of a particular apple tree. And as he came toward his home, his face pressed against the window of the train carriage, he looked to see the tree, and the tree was covered, not in one white handkerchief, but in dozens and dozens and dozens of white handkerchiefs. And his parents were simply saying to him, it's okay for you to come home. You're welcome. Come home. Come home. Come now. And Jesus said, we'll never turn a repentant sinner away. Never. There will always be a white handkerchief hanging on that tree, hanging on the cross at Calvary, that says to every repentant sinner, whether it's you or whether it's me, it's okay. It's time to come home. It's okay to come home. And the only question is, will we?